Right, yo, Keely Taverner, our psychotherapist, author and coach, is going to be joining us very shortly to answer your relationship questions. So often in terms of relationships, it can be quite difficult to maybe bring it up with your partner, a family member, a friend, you know. Maybe you've got something that's bothering you in your relationship. Keely is going to be joining us shortly. So get in quick. Send in your questions to 086 60 25,000. It could be about any element of a relationship, not just romantic, personal, family, all that kind of stuff as well. So if you want to get a question to Keely, you better get on to us right about now, because she's going to be joining me very, very shortly indeed. A caller says, hi, Greg. Is it true that some Ukrainian people went home for Christmas and that we've paid 800,000 to bring their pets over here? If you could get some answers, it could be great. Yes, of course, some people did choose to go home for Christmas, for right or wrong. And yes, indeed, over the course of the response, 800,000 euro has been spent bringing patients. Animals, what do you call them, pets? Great job, Greg, on asking about Gripped. He's walking out on the question he doesn't want to address. As I say, you might not be satisfied with the answer, but that is, in fact, the question. And the answer there is on the record. Keely Taverner is, as I say, a psychotherapist, author and coach. He's with us now. Keely, how are you getting on? I don't think I've spoken to you in 2024. Happy New Year. How are you keeping? You're looking great.
I'm doing really well. Can't complain. Well, I could complain, but, you know, life does what life does.
So. It was a rhetorical question. No, I'm only joking. It was not. No, I always ask that question in earnest. New year, new me. Do people make big changes about themselves in the new year? Do they hope to, and then nothing comes to pass? Or
I think naturally, with the way that we have downtime between Christmas and New Year, not all of us, but some of us do. It's a place for reflection, and thinking about what we want. We're reflecting on what's gone on for 2023 and what we would like. So I think it's only natural that it naturally, you know, spins into 2024. I think the challenge with whatever vision or goals that we have for the new year is the challenge really around accountability. So often if there is no accountability and you're just left to your own devices, it can often mean that we might drop off.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so what do you need to put in place? If every year you're going to go to the gym and you're going to lose 3 stone, but by the end of January or February it's dropped off, what might we need to be doing differently is something that I'm always curious about.
Because there is, you often see people make big changes in their life post-breakup, you know, be it going to the gym, be it changing a hairstyle, or be it whatever. That sounds, that's, you know, men or women. I'm not making any judgments in that regard. So often we can actually maybe see a proper new chapter and a new me, you know, post a big event in life. Maybe it could even actually be a bereavement or something. Well, what is the psychology there? What is empowering us to make the changes that ordinarily we can't post traumatic experience?
I think a crisis situation or a rock bottom situation is actually a beautiful place to begin to reflect. It's often a time when people like often call me when things are incredibly difficult. And actually it's an opportunity to reflect, especially after a relationship breakdown. I think we need to be frank that actually relationships take a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm. Even good relationships. Even good relationships.
Yeah, relationships take energy, you know, and that's not a bad thing. It's neither good nor bad, it just is. But for example, at the end of a relationship, obviously people have time on their hands, their schedules have changed, life may well be, you know, changing depending if you live with someone. And sometimes there's people want to distract themselves, mm-hmm. right? So they might get hyper busy doing something else, but also actually the reclaiming of the energy means that actually what might I actually want to put my energy into? What have I been distracted by, not focused off, put off? Because like I said, relationships take a lot of energy, and it can give you that opportunity to begin to think, actually, this is one thing I really want to do for myself.
Yeah.
So that kind of crisis, rock bottom, can bring us into a stark awareness that without that, And that is the beauty of adversity.
Yeah, and there's a protection mechanism there, a human response, or there's something in your DNA, something that goes back for thousands of years that you know, because we're all very different, but an awful lot of us are the same as well in how we react and what triggers us and all that. You know, we're not as unique sometimes as we might think we are.
Exactly. And let's be frank, and that's not for everybody. Some people don't come up from rock bottom. It becomes, you know, not everybody recovers. And I think that's also something that's really important to also acknowledge, that not everybody does.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need a low. You know, we live in this culture which is like perpetually promoting be happy. And you need, I believe we need those valley experiences to get clarity.
Yeah.
And then potentially make a choice about, okay, so what might I need to do now? And not everybody has that.
Yeah. And it's so true, right, too, what you say, because, you know, and obviously we primarily talk about relationships and what have you, but often, and on a program like this, I would interview people who have gone through alcohol addiction, drug addiction, gambling addiction, and very often there is a moment, there is a rock bottom that changes the course of their life, and they're heard. But I think you make a really good point. There's a number of people as well that hit that rock bottom and don't come back up, and their voices don't get heard in the media or what have you, and they should never be forgotten either. Some questions mm-hmm. for you. My boyfriend has suddenly switched off notifications on his phone, which I thought was odd. Then he removed his Apple Watch. It's made me very suspicious. Am I being paranoid?
Well, have you asked?
No. All of these questions are going to be based from the perspective that they haven't asked. That's why they're asking you, Kayleigh.
Yeah. So it's okay to be curious, you know, and then we notice how somebody responds. I've noticed you're not wearing your watch. I noticed that there's no more notifications. And I'm just curious about what changes are going on for you. It's okay to be curious, not judgmental. So you might have an assumption that maybe something untoward is happening. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's another relationship. Potentially it could be. Potentially they could be in a toxic WhatsApp group with their family and actually it's just not healthy for them and they've had a digital detox. So I'd be also curious to understand if there are other behaviors that are also, like, you're starting to draw dots together. Mm-hmm. On a Friday night, you're never available.
Yeah.
You know, and you might be less present, less attentive. We may even, intimacy may have been compromised, or all of a sudden you're wanting, you know, intimacy in a very different, rough and rugged way. Like, there are other nuances to pay attention to, and then to notice what assumptions you may have, catch that. My assumption is that there's somebody else or I'm being cheated on. Notice that. And then when you're in a calmer state, rather than coming from the lunatic state, right, we can become curious and ask.
Mm-hmm. And also too, you know, like, I think there should be space in a relationship where you should be able to ask that outright. Say, listen, you're not wearing your Apple Watch. I couldn't help, notifications have been silenced as well. What's going on? If you were sitting there and that were bothering you and you didn't feel you could bring that up, maybe you'd be afraid of the person's reaction. Why are you saying that to me for? Why are you accusing me of that? And then the person is sort of like double victimized because they're made to feel as if they're going a wee bit mad and also questioning the fidelity of their partner. You know, so I would ask myself, if you felt you couldn't ask that outright in a way that isn't sort of accusing someone of something, that's, I'm not saying it's a red flag, but it's certainly something that we'd need to take note of.
Well, for example, if someone's going to become, there's two things. Firstly, if you're someone who tends to sweep things under the rug and pretend you're okay when you're not, that means that part of you is going to be activated. So then you're going to be holding it. And people who tend to hold on to things, I often find in therapy, tend to also have IBS in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
They end up with a physical health symptom. So I'd be curious whether they are someone who tends to avoid having uncomfortable conversations. That would be my first premise. But also, when we become curious, we're also going to pay attention to how someone responds to it, reacts to us. And if you notice there's a defensiveness, or you're what's often called gaslit, where they flip it back, and they put it all on you, it's an interesting point, because that in itself would suggest, this is why I never ask, because I get a hostile reaction. And that's the benefit of coming to that curiosity from a place of calmness.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a place of calmness, I've noticed, and I just wondered what's going on for you.
Mm-hmm.
That way, should someone gaslight you and try to suggest that you're this, that, the other, fair enough. I've noticed these changes, and rather than not say, I'd rather say, because I don't want to get in my head about it. I'd rather ask.
Yeah, but people get a...
being transparent.
I think too, maybe people get a gut feeling, and they know their gut's probably often right. And that may be a barrier to sort of going down that route. It's a similar question. My phone, my boyfriend always has his phone facing down. Should I be worried? Now, I always place my phone most of the time facing down on the couch, because it's cloth. Don't want to spill tea on it. Sometimes I don't want notifications, just the phone to be lighting up to tell me what the weather's going to be like tomorrow. It could be something, might not be something.
It may well be, and it may well not be. And let's be frank, we do complain when somebody isn't present and they are perpetually on their devices. That is actually particularly annoying. I'd be wanting to think about that in the context of, you know, there's other things like, do they have work emails on their phone? Because a lot of people are also in these work WhatsApp groups, mm-hmm. which also is a robber of our time and our energy. So I'd be curious about other aspects of their behavior. And there's also paranoia. You know, are you someone who tends to be quite paranoid? Are you someone who's also quite self insecure? What is this activating?
See, with me, it's funny, because with me, mostly it is because I close the phone with my thumb. And it's part of you turn it over and close it with your thumb. Do you know what I mean? So it literally could be something as simple as that. But then again, if you see the phone light up and they get up and take their phone with them for no obvious reason, you know what I mean? Obviously, then it's worth inquiring about. This is a biggie. Can Keely please tell me how to date a man these days? I've done the dating apps and it just is a disaster. You put all the time into talking. You meet and all goes well for, if you're lucky, 3 months. And then it's back to the start all over again. Men say they're in it for love and marriage. It's like they are bored and off they go again, or they behave in a manner that has red flags all over it. At 32, I feel like giving up on finding the love my parents had. Help me, please. Now, this is based on dating apps, and
you know, a part of me really is starting to think more and more as I learn more about these issues with dating apps, is it's that we become commodities,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so there's
too
this
easy.
Kind of, you know, like, you know, you're sort of shopping as if you're shopping on Amazon. And obviously we're basing it on often, there's the, you know, depending on your learning style, you're going to see the visual. You may well read. I'm not a reader, so I might go with the visuals, right? So actually, you know, getting to know someone, and obviously if they keep dropping off after 3 months, it may be, and I think this is something for us to really consider, that actually maybe it's not for you. With her way of being, it may not be for you. Personally, I'm much more of a fan of getting up, maybe going to things, going to activities, hobbies, things that interest me, where, like, I'm not sure how popular it is now, but there used to be meetup groups,
yeah.
which is international.
Mm-hmm.
Eventbrite, you might put in a topic, something that you're interested in, and then you go. You might do a class. What's something that interests you? What's a hobby that you have?
And you're likely to meet someone that's like-minded, because I would imagine there are some who, there's a formula to it. They know what to say to get the first date. They like the little buzz of meeting someone new, and they know that they can, before there's a huge emotional attachment, they know they can just start it over again and have that perpetual excitement of a fresh start in a relationship or what have you. I mean, if you are in that space, and I'm sure lots of people are and have great success with it, you kind of have to know there are going to be people in there with that mindset. And I think, and I don't think this is too controversial, it's probably more likely to be men than it might be women.
Absolutely. And let's not forget, you know, some people are deliberately on there to hoodwink and prey upon vulnerable people to exploit them. I've worked with enough clients who have had money, you know, they've been stuck on a rig in Russia and all of a sudden need £10,000 to be shipped over to them. So it's something, and that doesn't mean that that won't happen face to face. If it, you know, you also have to consider, does this platform work for me? What might be other ways that I can meet people, be it to pursue an interest to get myself out? Because one of the challenges is we want our relationships to fulfill us. And often, so often, so much of the things that we might like, we never explore. A bit like what we said, when crisis happens, we may decide that actually, I'm going to start doing tap dancing lessons. It's something I've always wanted to do and I've never done it. So our identities can get lost and we can have super high expectations that relationships can fulfill us. What are other things that you might want to do so that you're putting yourself out there, so that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket? Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting it just to come from dating apps. Actually, like, one of the things I want to do is like a National Geographic holiday expedition. And you go with 14 strangers. Like, that's a beautiful way to meet new friends. I'm a massive advocate, especially as we get up in age, right? I want to be friends first. I want to get to know someone rather than coming from this kind of, often, not always, not for everybody, and people don't like this one, this desperate place of meeting the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's a human condition and you have to sort of counteract that. Your brain works against you and for you at times. Last question, if you don't mind, Keely. I have a relationship question, please. A new relationship since last summer. We are both older adults. We have both experienced breakups and what have you. So we're seeing how things go. Now, his previous partner has been in contact and would like him back. I do appreciate his honesty by telling me, but it's now like a cloud at the moment, and inside I'm feeling so upset. I very much enjoy his company and see potential for a long-lasting relationship. But a partner has re-entered his life, as I mentioned, Keely, and says that she would like to get back with him.
Well, I'd be curious about, I'd notice my own reaction. It might be natural, you feel jealous, you might feel insecure and uncomfortable. I'd be curious about where that leaves that individual. What might they want to do about the fact that an old flame has got in touch? It's wonderful that he's transparent. We pay attention to that. The part of me that is cautious might be wonder if he's starting to breadcrumb seeds that they may not want to. That might be my own insecurity, that they may not want to continue with the relationship. However, I think it's important to notice what your reactions are, but come back to the individual. Where does that, I appreciate you telling me, where does that leave you? Does that leave you wanting to be curious? Do you want to meet up with that individual? Because they may well do. And if they're going to be transparent about that, I have respect for transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I have respect for, I may not like it, mm-hmm. but at least that person's not lying. Mm. And so that also gives you a space to be clear about, well, actually, I'm not comfortable with that. And
that's
okay,
isn't it? That is not a controlling, or you have to know what your is tolerable in yourself, don't you? And if you do, if she says, look, I thought this was going someplace, but I'm just going to be completely honest with you, I'm not comfortable with this X in the background, especially when it's quite clear that she's interested in getting back to you. I can't sort of enjoy this relationship or this experience with that, as she described it, a cloud hangover. I mean, that's okay. I don't think that's any strange behavior or demanding, or, you know, yeah, you can't park what you feel and how you feel to try and please someone else, because it's always going to be based on a false premise, isn't it?
Acknowledge the reaction that you has in you. The key is you're not telling them what to do. I'm going to acknowledge what happens to me. The thing is, every relationship is optional. You know, romantic relationship, anyone can opt out at any point that they want. And that's why when we love, we risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't, we just never come out of our safe comfort zone again. When we love, we risk. he has free will. He is able to do whatever he wants to do. This is what it evokes in me. And I'm curious about what do you want to do about the fact that the old flame has reemerged? We must remind ourselves that relationships are optional and we cannot control people.
Okay. Keely Taverner is a psychotherapist, author and coach. A lot of the work's done also remotely. So whilst Keely is UK-based, you can still avail of her services. How do people find out more information?
Keyforchange.com.
Bada bing. Thank you very much indeed, Keely Taverner there. Back with more after a break. Sarah's on the line with me now. Hiya, Sarah.
Hello, good morning, Greg.
You discouraged, would that be fair to say, with the current political, I don't know how you'd describe it, makeup of politics in this country? What's your view of it?
Well, I just think that more and more people are kind of being disengaged from politics. So I think there are a few suggestions I'd like to make as regards how to improve our democratic system.
You believe that politicians, before we get to your examples, you believe politicians take us for granted?
If they take us for granted because they're sitting in, many politicians are sitting in the same seat for 10, 20, 30 odd years, and they nearly look upon it as they've achieved something by staying so long. Whereas I would take the view that, you know, you should be able to set yourself goals and a timeline to achieve certain things in what possibly, say, two terms should be long enough for anybody, because that's probably about 8 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that most people can achieve their goals in that time. And if they can't, either they're not able to, or let's give somebody else a try, somebody fresh ideas and fresh energy.
Yeah, so your first suggestion then is that terms to all political offices, presidential, council, TD, Senate, maximum of two terms and you're out. So if you can't achieve what you want to achieve in two terms, then it's time to jack it in, let someone else have a go.
Aye, because, you know, because it's currently very difficult for new people, new blood to get into mm-hmm. politics, you know. It's nearly a closed shop, because if you're a new candidate, you're up against certain politicians that have, you know, been doing work for their constituents and, you know, been doing favours. You're up against maybe 5, 10, 15 years of favours being done for people. And I don't even like using the word favours, because it's nearly like, oh, well, I'm doing that for you and you don't really deserve it, but I'm doing you a good turn. Which actually ties in with another suggestion.
Well, before we get to that, don't move so quickly, because I'm interested in what you're saying here. Do you think, too, it's possible that then politicians sort of get institutionalised? They just become part of the system. And that could extend to smaller parties, independents. Do you think after a period of time they just become part of the political system, even though they go in promising change and the sun and the moon and the stars, that eventually they have to conform?
It's probably a bit of human nature and possibly a bit of surviving within the system that you're in. And I suppose it applies to more workplaces than just political office, mm-hmm. that a person does kind of nearly conform to what's there already, even though they might have gone in thinking, well, I would like to change this or that for the better, you know. A person can, I suppose, get worn down maybe, but you see, if you've got old hands and, you know, sitting, it might be a bit kind of mm-hmm, yeah. bitter at, you know.
Because in the private...
Wearing down people, as it were.
Yeah, in the private area, Sarah, you know, lots of people working in companies, maybe higher up, will have key performance indicators, you know what I mean, whereby they're hired to do a job and they're set targets or what they must deliver. And they're judged on that.
Aye.
If they do it, they get a promotion or they get retained. If they fail, there's the option then to sack them. So that's what happens in private life. Now, another suggestion you have, this is as it relates to the actual voting process, Sarah?
I was thinking that, you know, and I'm not the only one thinking it, I'm sure, is that on the ballot paper, all ballot papers, that there should be an option where you have the candidates. And if you don't think any of those candidates are suitable for the job, that you don't feel that you can give your valuable vote to them, then you should be able to tick a box that says none of the above. Because people sometimes get exasperated and write none of the above on their paper. But all you're doing there is actually spoiling your voice, and therefore you're not counted. Whereas if there was a none of the above, then that figure would be counted in the tally, and it would give feedback to the politicians about the satisfaction or otherwise of the candidates being put forward. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let fresh candidates then get a chance to go in the ballot paper. You know, if I run for election and none of the above, you know, rules me out, well, don't let me run again. You know, let somebody else go on the ballot paper.
I just wonder, Sarah, though, I mean, obviously maybe we can count that at the moment between spoiled votes, but particularly apathy, i.e. people not voting in the first place. But you say, I think what you're suggesting, this would give us an idea of that. But also, like... I mean, there's an awful lot of people, not awful lot, but not the majority, but there's a lot of people that don't think anyone can change. They've disengaged with politics because they actually don't believe whoever it is can actually work against the system. You know, they're described as often, Sarah, the permanent government, the civil servants. It's not a politician decided to remove services from St. Joseph's Hospital. No, that was no one elected, probably not even anyone based in this county. Do you know what I mean? So people go, well, what's the point? What change can these people... There's no point in them just getting angry with us. You know, what difference do they make? And I think a lot of those people... I think they'd all write none of the above, because I speak to people that don't think anyone can change what they see as a broken political and civil servant system. And I'm not talking about the civil servants, by the way, working hard in buildings around Donegal. You know what I'm on about, the higher ups. They feel that
the higher ups, yeah,
exactly. They feel that there's no point who you elect. None of the above, because it doesn't matter.
I think you underestimate how much, you know, that politicians can influence. You know, I do think they have more influence than maybe we think, generally speaking, you know.
So I'm almost giving them a pass in that commentary.
I think, especially in these kind of select committees that you would see on TV, especially the finance one we see recently, the way they bring in RTE over the coals, you know, with regards bringing them to account. You see, accountability is at the bottom of it, isn't it? But like that, if you're an elected politician that has been in there for 10, 20, 30 years, you're part of the system and you don't really want change because, let's face it, you have your kind of job for life and you get comfortable. Human nature, not blaming folks, but it's kind of not good enough. It's not good enough for a healthy democracy. So I think we need to freshen it up a bit, you know.
Okay.
And I think politicians all need to have a job description as well, you know, because what can we expect from them, and what they can manage our expectations by saying what they can do for us. And if I might make one final point, this idea of a nominee, you know, for example, in the European elections last time round, I forget his first name, Mr. McCarthy ran.
Matt McCarthy, He ran for the Dáil Éireann, didn't he?
Well, I don't really remember the Dáil one, but I suppose he must have, because I think that's where he is now. But I think this idea that he run and get elected for, in his case, Europe, and then that he can just put in somebody else in his place, I just think that's so wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody that voted for him, well, this other man didn't apply for the job.
Yeah.
You know, his name wasn't on the ballot paper.
If I remember correctly, and there are examples, and you're right, I'm not contradicting you, but if I remember correctly, that it was said in advance that it was almost as if people were voting for two people. If I am successful in Europe and subsequently successful in the Dáil, then such and such will take my EU seat. Now, that's not how it works. That's not how election works, but I seem to recall that's the way it was at the time. But in terms of co-opting, leaving and nominating someone else, you believe if a seat becomes vacant, it's different in the Dáil, but in the council and EU, you believe then that should trigger another election?
No, I think, you know, you go back to the people that applied for the job in the first place.
Right.
You look to see where the count was. So, you know, you go A, B, C, D, and if D wants to give up, or A or B wants to give up their seat, then you go to who was the next person who was highest in the poll. Yeah, they applied for the job. They canvassed the people. You know, that's democracy in my view, whereas the existing system is not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Callers, just before I let you go, I totally agree with Sarah. Far too many turn the seat into a family seat. If one retires, a family member takes it over and hence continues the cycle. These seats need new blood and new ways of doing things. I agree with Sarah. There are many politicians who haven't delivered for the county. These politicians gave €800 million to Northern Ireland. What about the dual carriageway from Lifford to Manor Cunningham? Another, Sarah, totally right. The HSE delivered a massive blow to the community of Stranraer yesterday. And that's it. No reversals. Politicians shout for a day and that's it, but nothing changes. Another, never heard anyone talk so much sense. Great points. And finally, what about the politicians who achieve their goals? Should they also be made go? The election is the biggest job interview they will do, and we, the public, complain, but we continue to vote the politicians we know. I mean, so the system does allow for a deselection. You know, this is the public that are making these decisions, Sarah. So say, for instance, you talked of a politician that is, you know, elected to the Dáil on multiple occasions. It is by the public. That is democracy. And they can be deselected if the public judge that they don't do their work over the term. So you don't, do you trust the public then?
No, you see, the public are electing who's put in front of them. And my idea is that, you know, you shouldn't get running time and time and time again. If I'm elected and I get me 2 terms, I don't think I should be allowed to then run again. I think, you know, the council, there's approximately 30 members sitting, I think.
38, yeah.
Well, let a third of them, you know, resign, as it were, you know. But after your 2 terms, don't let the same person be put forward again,
okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Because the public are only able to vote on the people that are put in front of them. And that's why you keep getting the same people and the same things happen. Keeping the same thing all the time, you don't get any change, you know. And as regards, somebody said job interview, one of my things is a job description. I remember asking, it was actually Ivan Yates, do you remember he had a show on radio?
I
sent a text and I said, something like the job description or the objective of a politician, the job description of a politician or something. And he kind of laughed on the radio and he said, well, he said it's to get re-elected, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not good enough. You know,
but he drank from the trough. He drank from the trough long enough as well. But I do.
Well, I mean, I like him and all that as a radio person and so on. But no, I agree. And like that, probably started out with great intentions too. But like that, human nature has to be built in. And yep, I used to work in a charity and the board of trustees or whatever. A third of them had to resign every year. You know, It's like a stagnant pool of water.
Mm.
You know, what happens to a stagnant pool of water? Wouldn't you be better with fresh water kind of running through?
And also,
you
too,
mightn't get rid of all the stagnant.
I mean, what you also see, and maybe this is sort of a symptom of the system you talk of, you know, that when whatever we, who we vote for, we don't vote for ministers as such. Ministers are appointed. And you often see a minister in charge of a department and they've got no real experience or background in that, be it housing or education or whatever it might be. And I'm not picking them out, I'm just saying as an example, surely ministers should have strong experience or indeed qualifications before they can take over such a portfolio. You wouldn't put me in charge of running a farm if I've got no agricultural background, would you?
Well, if you were keen and enthusiastic and you had certain goals that you wanted to achieve, and then you would look for the right person to train you, and you would be probably more than capable of doing it if you had some ideas and objectives that you wanted to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got the raw materials, I think you can train most people up to do a job,
okay.
You know.
A caller says, sure, look at how difficult parties are finding it to get candidates to run. If they need replaced every 2 terms, there'd be some crisis. But your proposition would change politics in that You know, people wouldn't have to make such a long-term commitment. More people who feel they could make a change might come forward. You know, a lot of people won't come up as candidates because they don't really want to step into the system as is. So, like, I think for us to presume what you suggest, we'd also have to presume that politics would change fundamentally as well. So, in other words, I don't think that. Morning, Greg. Fully agree with Sarah. Well done to her. Thank you. Interested in what Sarah is saying. She's giving me more food for thought. It's just a pity people do not stop to think for themselves. Is that anything you have an opinion on Sarah? I kind of feel lucky in that I could have an opinion and I could talk to you. And you could convince me otherwise, where I could go, you know what, that makes an awful lot of sense. Like, I don't mind reversing or changing my position, and I have on an awful lot of things in life. Do you worry that we as a public, though, have been too hive-minded, be it to the left, be it centrist, be it to the right? Do we as a public have to take any criticism, do you think, in how politics runs in this country?
I think at the end of the day, we are citizens and we should take responsibility. And putting an idea forward like this is maybe one wee part of my taking responsibility. But we elect people, and then I do think we then don't hold our politicians, local or national, to account. You know, we wait until they knock on the door looking for our vote, and then we say, they only came, you know, once, and they're only looking for my vote. But in the 4 or 5 years in between times, what did I do or anyone else do as a citizen to say, well, now councillor or now TD, what have you done on this particular issue? You know, I don't think we participate enough ourselves, you know. And as regards the previous person that said about, you know, they have trouble kind of getting people into politics, well, part of that is because of why a lot of people just, you know that it is a closed shop. You know, even if you belong to a party, there's nothing to say you'll ever get a chance to run for your party. Or if you're an independent candidate, it's very, very difficult to get in because, like I say, you're up against certain candidates who have awarded in a 5-10 years of favour. So that is a process of wearing people down and dissuading people from entering politics.
All right, Sarah. And I suppose, too, actually, you know, we could have another 15 minutes conversation about the whip system as well, which is...
indeed.
Yeah, exactly. Sarah, thanks for your time. A lot of people were really interested in what you had to say, including myself. Thank you. Appreciate it. Great stuff.
Right.
All right, bye-bye. That's Sarah there, who texted into the show and was good enough to come on and expand on her views. Now, Irish people will be deemed to be organ donors unless they've registered their wish not to donate as a long-awaited bill passed the Oireachtas this week. Details of the Human Tissue Transplant Postmortem Anatomical Examination and Public Display Bill 2022 were originally published by then-Health Minister Simon Harris in 2019 and followed on from a 2008 private member's bill on the issue, which was introduced by the late Senator Fergal Quinn. Right, the bill provides a legislative framework for the retention and disposal of organs used in post-mortem examinations. So it's significant. John Hegarty is a kidney transplant patient and was part of the shared transplant scheme in Britain, which allowed a donation of one organ to be given in return for another, which has been very useful. John, your reaction to this this latest hurdle this legislation has jumped, are you pleased?
Hello, Greg. Yes, it's great news. I'm very pleased. Basically, the bill introduces a soft opt-out register, and that's a big change in the fact that before, you know, it was down to like the families to decide, whereas now it's kind of, you know, it just changes things a lot in the way that it's, you know, it's people's wishes are more going to be, well, how should I say, likely to be perceived, like, you know. So basically, families will be consulted when the loved one's not opted out, and it ensures that families at the I'm completely lost here.
No,
Let me start again here, Greg.
Yeah, go ahead. Take it. Well, can I ask you a question first, John?
I'm so excited about the news. Basically, so let's talk about the current system at the minute. So basically, when you're an organ, when you pass away, at that time your families are approached for consent at the minute. So that's the current system, okay? Now, moving forward, it's assumed that you automatically consent unless you opt out, okay? So to opt out, it's a soft opt out. Basically, you'd have to complete a form to say that you're looking to opt out of organ donation. So basically, if you passed away, your families at that time now would be asked, is there any reason why your family would not want to donate instead of being a, would they, you know, would you like to donate your organs? Like, you know, so it's a big move, it's a big step forward, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will increase the amount of organs available to people in need, you know, because
yeah.
it's at the minute there's only 1% let me get the exact stat here. There's only 1% of people die in circumstances where organ donation is possible. So that's a very little amount of organs available to people in need like myself. So the main thing is to increase that. Obviously, that there's more, you know, available for people that's waiting in the long term. You know,
need themselves,
you know?
John, just at the moment, okay, if say, for instance, I'll use me as an example. Say, for instance, I want to donate my organs. I am more likely probably to tell those closest to me, look, if something were to happen to me, my wish is that my donations can be used to give other people life or to improve life. I wonder, and what that means is that on the ward, on that day, when the decision is made that I won't survive, those closest to me may well be aware of my wishes. What are we going to do, John, when a situation arises that we're all presumed to be donors and the specialist on the ward comes up to the family and goes, as you know, everyone now is a donor. They're probably less likely to know my wishes and to object. Do you know what I mean? Is it proven that this will actually lead to more organs being available? If that makes sense, I hope it does.
Yes, I know where you're coming from. Well, I mean, in recent years, it's been adopted in Wales, a similar scheme, and I think there's an increase there. Obviously, at this point, it's only getting put onto legislation. Like, obviously, it'll have to go through the cogs that be to become active. It's to be signed off by the president, hopefully within the next week or two, and hopefully, I mean, it is a massive step forward, Greg. Like, I can't see why it won't, you know. I think it will become allow more organs. Like, and I think families will realise. The question has been asked a different way now, basically, you know. And I think it's definitely going to increase organs. But the most important thing, Greg, and the most important message to get out there is, no matter what, always have the conversation with your family.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, no one wants to be in a position where obviously there's a tragedy or, you know, sad times. But the important thing, and it's always been this way and it always should be this way, it's about having the conversation with your family. I mean, currently we can have a driver's license with a code on it and we can carry a donor card. But realistically, unless your family know, I mean, or your next of kin, that's the most important thing. So no matter what, I think it's important to emphasise that you make your relatives aware. And I mean, even this today now is the perfect opportunity, and this bill being passed in the Dáil yesterday, I mean, that's the perfect chance for families all around Ireland to have this conversation now, you know. And if there is a reason why you wouldn't like to be a donor, that's okay too. That's I mean, that's fine. But I mean, now's the time to make it known, like.
Okay, listen, great to speak to you. Thank you very much indeed, John. I really do appreciate your time. John Hegarty there, kidney transplant patient, reacting to that news. Now, I want to let you know that John Breslin is around the Northwest, out and about this morning. He's broadcasting live from the Central Library, Letterkenny, for the launch of the Read DL. It's the annual One Book, One Community programme. And his show, as always, is from noon to 2:30 p.m. It's everything you expect as normal. He's got the new normal features, newsy bits, and plenty of great music, but also information on Read DL 2024. For Read DL 2024, this year's title is The Summer I Robbed a Bank. It's a chaotic robbery, plenty of sheep, and a summer of discoveries come together in the hilarious and heartwarming novel. It's from comedian, actor, and author David O'Doherty, who was actually really quite a funny guy. Okay, so stay tuned for that. That's coming up. Voting is by tradition in families, believes a listener. That's what needs to change. Another caller says it's a good start. However, it's also the people that are always working there, like the civil servants who make certain decisions or to tell politicians what can and can't be done. So for moving all the politicians, we're going to have to move all the civil servants as well, or make a fundamental change there. Well, I remember at the time of the last election when Rishi Sunak took over, there was a top civil servant job, and I think it was changed because they felt they might be banging their head against a brick wall. That person was changed. But look, that's Sarah's suggestion, and it's got people talking. And isn't that what it's all about? Morning, I voted for Sinn Féin in the past. I'm bewildered by them now, backing the hate speech legislation. Tell the public we don't have an open border. Everyone can see we have, and backing for a yes, yes in the referendum. I firmly believe they are the new form of Fianna Fáil. I or my family would not be voting for them. They've turned their backs on their grassroots supporters, and maybe views like that are being reflected in the recent polls, which show a support for Sinn Féin slipping. Some people are going to change their minds, of course. A caller says, great job on asking about, I've read that already. Varadkar really let it show there. Another reason the hate speech law will be a disaster. He just criticised a journalist and media outlet because it's not state media and is actively questioning the government on its activities. How dare he question who finds it or who subscribes or funds it or who subscribes, as I don't hear him questioning who owns all the other media and what agenda they are pushing. It's laughable. I'm interested a listener picked up on that because I thought it an interesting response to that question. Greg, why do you have the folk that people really want to ask questions to on Sean at 10 to 10? This is a very good question, actually, by the way. Sean Murphy, Leo, Dara O'Brien, you have a set number of questions you have to ask, but they are kind of bland and take and talking points. I'm disappointed. Well, there's different things. I would argue a lot of the questions I've put to Dara O'Brien, he won't come back on the show. And Sean Murphy as well would tell you my question of him is very, very robust. Why do they come on at 10 to 10? Very, very interesting. Very interesting. Maybe people feel that they know that there is a deadline that we have to go off air for the news and obituary notices. So trust me, me and Caroline aren't saying, right, if we put it on at 10 to 10, we can get the couple of bland questions out. They can do the PR and we can go for coffee while the news is on. It ain't like that. But it's very interesting that you should pick that up. Let me just put it to you like that. Hey, have a wonderful day. We're back tomorrow morning from 9. We kick off with the Friday panel and loads of other stuff. Is it not legal questions tomorrow, Caroline? Is it? No, it's not tomorrow. Okay, so listen, have a great day. Stay tuned for John Breslin, though. He's going to have a great show for you as always.